closer.
Sure,
the
you know.
Biggest, you know.
Yeah, well, you know, Beef-O-Rama is a specialty upon itself. Layers of beef upon layers of beef, stacked high enough to climb upon. It's breathtaking.
It's a pile of meat and it's a pile of drinks, folks. Get the Beef-O-Rama only in Minocqua, Wisconsin. It's the only time of year you can go downtown in a cow costume and get absolutely tanked.
Yep, you know, and after you know what's in store here, Dick? You know, after the fabled parade of beef, which everybody looks forward
to.
Yeah, comes today's entertainment, a little band you might have heard of called Bobby Carlson and the Briskets. They obviously play both kinds of music, classic rock and folk.
Oh, that's the best combo, a little Foreigner and a little Knutson's, if you will, there.
Yep, Knutson and the Kneeknockers, they're good.
Knutson and the Kneeknockers, folks, I'll tell you. Oh, look, there they come.
Here they come.
It's the Stewart brothers. They're dressed as Holsteins walking down the street.
Yeah, well, John, he goes as a Hereford sometimes too.
But I've seen it.
Yep.
Oh, look, right there, it's Freddie Palermo. Is he a Hungarian gray or is he a black? What do you think this year?
I think he's a Hungarian gray, but how the heck did they let him in the country?
Oh, how'd you let him in there? Oh, look, it's the Big Ticket. He is dressed as a Red Angus, I believe. It's a Red Angus, is it?
Yeah. You betcha. It's a longhorn breed, you know?
Folks,
he's a big boy.
This is the only time you'll ever see people dressed as cows stumbling down the road. Get to Beef-O-Rama, Minocqua, Wisconsin.
All right, folks, welcome to the Muskie 360 podcast live from Jay Bird's house. Jay Bird.
Hey, Steve.
How's it dozing?
Well, I tell you what, I just got back from Beef-O-Rama last weekend. We were out and about there. It was awesome.
Folks, if you don't know what happened, so I'm going out on the boat the other day.
Yep.
And I'm going through downtown Minocqua, and it was surreal. It's like 7 in the morning.
Yeah, I warned you. I said, hey, plan for extra time. I mean, this is a big event. There's a lot of people that go to that. It's pretty amazing.
every drunk in the Northwoods is dressed as a cow.
They dress up as cows. There's a lot of Holsteins, a lot of redundancy there. Yeah, but you see some cool species.
Come on now.
Yeah.
Pick it up.
Right.
There's more than one kind of cow.
Yeah. Show some class.
Show some class. You just can't be a milker your whole life.
Right. Right.
Pick it up.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, Beef-O-Rama is this surreal event in the Northwoods where people are dressed as cows and they're very, 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 very drunk.
Yeah, it's part of it. They parade of beef. They got live bands and, you know, you name it. It's there.
The parade of beef. So, anyway, it's been interesting. I've been up here of all things. So, you know, why are you in the Northwoods, Steve? Right. Filming for a little TV show. That was fun. Got another TV thing coming up next week. I'll tell you guys about it when these things are coming out. But filming for a pretty dang popular show, and came up and visited with Jay. And, you know, sort of my take on the Northwoods right now, or the Northern Habitat Zone, it's been kooky. I mean, we had 80, 81 the last 2 days.
Yeah.
Me and Jay watched the Minocqua News last night. That was surreal.
That was entertaining.
That was
we had a good time.
Horrific.
Yeah.
Followed by me, Jay, and neighbor Steve watched some local fishing program that came on. And it was the worst thing I've ever seen. So we're going to try to get him on the show.
Buck McNeely.
Oh, Buck McNeely. Yeah,
that was good stuff, man. That was fun.
Oh,
it was fun.
That was something else. So it's been crazy, but I called Booker this week.
What'd you call him?
Well, I caught him on the phone.
Oh, I see. I gotcha.
And I've been hearing the chatter, the pavlum. All the muskies are deep, right? But what I'm hearing from everyone else is the muskies they're seeing, quote unquote, are I said deep. I'm an idiot. I've not been drinking, I promise. Everyone's saying the muskies are super shallow, right? Shallow, 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 shallow. They're moving them on blades, but no one's catching anything. And I went, oh, great. So day one in town, I'm sort of going around the shop. What are you thinking, Elmer? What are you thinking, Fred? Big ticket, what are you seeing? Super shallow fish, but we're not catching them. They're coming in. Well, that didn't sound like the greatest thing to me, right? Yeah. You go, well, everyone's seeing them, but no one's catching them. Absolutely laid the freaking wood to these things by fishing shallow, suspended fish. So if you're coming up to the Northwoods or you're fishing, don't be afraid of depth. You're going to hear people say, oh, they're shallow. They're shallow. They're shallow. Shallow does not mean shallow structurally. It means they are shallow in the water column over structure, right? Yeah. So your bait doesn't have to land in 6 inches. The biggest fish we caught this week, we actually, Jay's seen it. We did it on the first show I was swimming with. It started with a 5 and ended with a 0. And we got some other ones. It was ridiculous.
Yeah.
And it was a topwater fish. My boat is setting in 20. Are you kidding me?
Mm-hmm.
We actually caught a topwater trolling fish this week.
Yep.
And.
Well, I say, yep. I wasn't with you.
Yeah, but yeah, but you've seen it. Yeah, actually, we got the footage and all this stuff.
Right.
So shallow doesn't have to be shallow structurally. Shallow could be shallow in the water column. The one commentary I'll make would be this. Big fish typically want access to deep water, like I've always said.
Yeah.
If I'm seeing crappie, perch, all these panfish feeding in open water, why am I throwing them in 2 feet of water when they're feeding over the suspended weeds, or not suspended weeds, but the deeper weeds? They're in the open basin, and all I need to do is troll or cast that area. So don't relegate yourself to, you know, the boat sitting in 5, I'm throwing to 1. You can do some things that are different because it has been super productive for me. It's basically a week and a half I've been up here. And I think I got 17 or 18 in the boat in a week and a half.
Crazy. Yeah, and a lot of late mid-afternoon bike mid-afternoon, too,
yeah.
Where you're patterning that
yeah.
stuff.
So it's been good. I mean, I can't complain, but the quality of fish has been very, very, very high as far as size class. And so I think that's going to parlay into everybody else's season as it cools down in the Midwest. It cools down Ohio, West Virginia, all this stuff. Just because they move quote unquote shallow, shallow does not have to be shallow. Structurally, shallow could be shallow in the water column. Don't overlook that, because like I said, I came up here and there's a lot of great anglers. They're moving two or three a day and they're not getting the eats. And I wonder if the fish that are in this super shallows, is it a matter of there's so many bait fish they're full, or are they there to metabolize and these fish are eating open water, quote unquote, shallow? So it's something to consider in your game plan. Here I'm setting up like three, four casts off of the edge, being the shoreline, and burning blades and burning bucktails and just getting smoked. You know, basically, if an angler was set up and a really good cast could hit the shoreline, my cast could not hit his boat. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that you're off.
How far I've been off the edge. And, you know, a week ago I wouldn't have given that away, but I'm heading back home to Tennessard here shortly, so I don't care. So if you're coming up north, don't be afraid to fish shallow sections of the water column over deeper depth. It's paid off so many times this week.
Let's hope this holds true and sticks with it for a while. You know, we've had some very, very above seasonal weather. Even all last week, it was in the 60s. It never got cold at night. We've had some warm days here.
Mm-hmm.
Temps aren't supposed to start crashing until later this week. So water temps have not been dropping like they're supposed to. It's early October now. It's been crazy. So
I think it'll be crazy.
You're really dialed in on some cool alternative kind of thought patterns there.
I'm going to tell you, I've never in my life, and we've joked about it, like trolling topwater, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I have it on film. We'll probably use it next year of trolling topwater. We'll go, here's a deep weed edge. The tops of the weeds were maybe at 12. I've got the boat setting, you know, 14 and a rod stick over the side. And I said, why not? Boom. Got smoked. And I went, okay. Is that an anomaly or is that a pattern? Did it three more times this week. There's something to it, you know. And I'm not talking the bitter end of sundown. I'm talking 4 or 5 o'clock. These fish are moving up as the light angle changes. Because the bite windows, when we get in the fall, especially the further north we go, the more truncated they are.
I agree.
Right? So you need to be thinking about how to dial in. Where are the bait fish? What are they doing? Excuse me. I've not caught a fish in the early morning all week. So it's been late afternoon, early evening. The quote-unquote twilight bite, the night bite's not been existent. So doing things throughout the course of the day that might be, you know, goofy for most is targeting these fish that are coming up high in the water column.
You're not the only one that I've talked to in the last week that's had at least decent fishing or have stumbled upon that window. And that mm-hmm. window has been exactly in line with what you're saying.
Yeah.
With every guy I talked to, I can't tell you how many guys said, oh, I was out in the on a completely cloudless day mm-hmm. over the weekend. I talked to a guy this morning, and he had three fish going. 1 hour window, 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Right.
Some thermal thing.
Well, it's thermal energy. It's photo period. You know, you look at what Booger said the last tactical podcast we did. He's looking for high bright sun during this time frame. Big baits. Don't be afraid of big baits in the fall. And I think as the seasonality changes, You've got to be comfortable with going, you know, put away the double eights, put away the single eights, put away the 700s, go big or go home. The fish are looking for a decent meal.
Yeah.
You know, we've caught, heck, today It was a good day. It wasn't a banner day, but you know there was a 40 something and a 32.
Yeah, when did they come on?
And a 32 ate freaking double tens.
Oh yeah, okay.
I mean, come on. You know, you got to move some water this time of year. You just do. These fish are looking for it. I would say this, as the weather has ebb and flowed up north, I've seen the propensity for fish on the bad days. And I would say this, it's hard to calibrate what a good day and a bad day is in the fall, right? You can have really good overcast days, and you can have high bright sun days that are good, or overcast days, or whatever it might be.
I know where you're going. That's a good point.
You need to be observant. Mm-hmm. Where sometimes slow rolling and getting down deep is going to be the ticket, where we have, what, 5 days where there was no sun.
Yeah. It was like that 2 days before you got here.
And it was like, if you wrote down musky weather, holy crap.
Low-hanging clouds. Yeah, just sticky, drizzling every other minute. Yeah, just 7 days of it. That was ideal. But that's ideal in the summer, like you're saying right now.
It's right.
Like sometimes as you get later into the fall, it was a day like today, or it's just like, you know what? And it's the thermal energy thing and the heat of the day.
You got to get apply it because
springtime thing.
You know, we had one of the best days I've had in the water in years.
Yeah, last week there?
Yeah, last week.
Wednesday or something?
It was six. And it was, we got a 50, we got an upper 40s, we got a 41, we got like a 40. It was just vulgar, right? The next day was indistinguishable, and it was slow.
The weather was like you
could not tell the difference.
Sure.
And I came out, I was like, oh yeah, just wait.
Here we go again.
Right, here it goes again. Carbon copy. And for some reason, they didn't want the same stuff. And it took me about half the day to finally give up the ghost and go, okay, dude, this isn't working. And they wanted it slow. And they wanted it deep. And they're hanging off the tops of the weeds opposed to suspended in the water column. So you can't take it for granted where you go, oh, this is the pattern, right? Low light. I mean, like I said, if you wrote down musky weather early in the week, it was musky weather. But you have to be observant of bait fish. And I would say the one thing I learned in the Northwoods this week, regardless of the weather, if the bait fish are low in the water column, guess where the muskies are, right? Trust your electronics, you know, pay attention to it. I don't care what you got, downscan, side scan, live image, you know, whatever. You got your wife down there in snorkel gear and she's saying perch her at 4 feet. Trust whatever you got, you know. Yep. Stick your head under there, Jay.
That's wonderful intel.
You're right.
Never seen it happen, but that's good.
Sometimes you got to get a piece of PVC.
Get down there and let me know what's happening.
Right. That's if you can't afford electronics, put a peace pipe in your mouth and dive down there.
Sure, sure.
You know, it's what you do what it takes.
Yep.
Oh, that's how the old timers used to do it.
Oh, get down there and take a look for me, dear.
Oh, you put two 10-pound downriggers on your friend.
They're down there.
Oh, he'd go, oh, how deep is it?
Pretty deep.
And then you'd throw pretty deep.
Gosh, yeah.
And they go, oh, not so deep. That was it.
Then you find a mid-range there.
Right.
Instead of the deep diver.
Uh-huh.
Right. It's called adapting.
And he jumps in. He goes, oh, they're over top of me. That's a shallow bite.
That's the original make an assessment.
Right. Friend. So, you know, buy some electronics or throw your friend in there with some downriggers and see where it goes, you know? I mean, so what? He passed out in the boat. I mean, this is what it takes to get. It's called commitment.
Train. It's not practicing. It's training. It's just hard training, work.
Right. This is Rocky and Rocky IV.
Yep.
You're going to get out there. You're going to. The four Rockies. Rocky III.
Okay.
You're pulling some old freaking Italian guy that owns, apparently has access to frozen meat on a dog sled in Russia.
Oh, yep. Okay. Gotcha. Visual picture.
Mick. So trust your electronics. Trust the staging of bait to really understand what is happening. the Northwoods bite for me has been speedy most days, right? Now, I would say that you have to consider that we need to sometimes have a deep and fast presentation. Okay? A couple days, the bait was low. I had to add weight to things. You know, with whether it be a Steve's meat grinder, whether it be a bucktail, don't be afraid to tweak your baits because speed is a trigger, especially this time. So big baits tend to have lift. A 9-inch shallow raider or double tens, a cowgirl, a spanky bait, whatever it might be, they're going to have some lift. Big baits are buoyant, or the blades on a big bait create lift. So we have to create depth, speed out of a big bait. How do we do that? The additional weight will really help you get there. One of the fish today was on a 2-ounce bell sinker clipped onto the shaft of a double 10 bucktail, Jay. Right? So you add that much weight to a bucktail, the running depth is way deeper.
2 ounce. What'd you get, another 3-4 feet out of that by doing that?
Oh, one? More than that. No kidding. I'd say 5-6. Maybe. On the cast, it's hard to tell.
Yeah. Interesting.
I can tell you this, because whatever, catch as many as you want up here. Watching the blades and then comparing my reeling speed to my trolling speed was about 2.6, 2.7, right? So the trolling fish on blades I picked up, 2.6, 2.7. Reeling, how was I getting that comparison? You go, you know, let's say my reel picks up 36 inches of line per turn. You can do some math, boom, right? I fished with a good friend, Bob Klinesworth. He's way smarter than anybody I know. He's a physics professor.
Professor? Mm. Professor? Ooh. I got a degree, Dad. I got my diplomas.
Did he pull out a slide rule?
He had one.
He had one with
yeah,
him.
He had a Hawk 2 tied to his belt.
God, he's not messing around, does
he's
he?
Not playing around. But, you know, we're talking, you could theoretically reel up to 6 miles an hour with blades. Like, okay. Cast distance, you know, turn per handle, yeah, yeah.
Six is moving.
Yeah, oh, yeah, but, you know, a lot of people, oh, you can't reel that fast. Actually, you can, 36 inches, whatever. I'm going to go down the rabbit hole, but to learn math. But that speed zone seemed to be working. I'll sort of look at the, I'm just giving you this tip. So the blades on a bucktail, depending on speed, they're going to flex out, right? They're going to cavitate different angles. So watch a retrieved bucktail versus a trolled bucktail, and it'll give you a ballpark, right? I think what happens a lot of times is people throw, like, say, double tens out, a spanky baiter or a cowgirl or whatever. And they'll have their rod doubled over and you go, dude, you're not pulling that hard when you're reeling. Like, if your rod is like tweaked over, you're burning, right? You're just gutting them. So be cognizant of the casting speed versus the trolling speed and sort of what that looks like. I think trolling blades is kind of a visual endeavor, right? Another thing I've been doing this week is really dialing in my trolling depths on blades with how deep I'm putting my rod in the water. And you're starting to see it up here, leaves, right? There's a lot of color.
Sure.
There's a lot of dead weed.
They're a nuisance.
They're a nuisance. It's like Wally across the street.
Oh.
If you could take him out, you would.
Take him out to dinner.
Take him out to dinner. Oh, with the supper club.
A good dinner roll.
Oh, he lives on them. But you need to be cognizant of this because you know, trolling Blades, this is the time to troll Blades or Shallow Cranks, whatever it might be. You're going to be contending with that. And the later we get in the season, basically, I would guess here, you know, you're going to have a really bad drop off here shortly. A couple nights in the 40s, you get one bad storm come through that's just covered in leaves. Using the rod tip in the water to control depth as well to alleviate debris. I've seen a lot of things over the years, like as far as like weed gatherers, just stick the freaking rod in the water. And I troll the Musky Shop shield rod, trolling rod, the 8-footers this time of year, or excuse me, most of the year. However, I'm not afraid to break out my 9-6 casting rods and some longer rods or just straight up trolling rods to get them down subsurface. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like, you're not going to hit anything.
We're not going to hit anything.
No, that works just fine.
So that's just a consideration. The other thing I would say is this, and it's a fall thing. There's always a deep fish. There's always a deep fish. I don't care.
Yep.
Take me to any lake up here. Panoptics has reiterated the point. There's two or three patterns going on at once. Right?
Meaning the strong pattern that everyone is queuing in on.
Shallow.
And it's great. And you got some huge fish and some dinks and fish
whatever
in between.
I mean, if you're
absolutely crushing them, but I yeah, that's interesting what you said. What, there's always going to be one in that deep zone.
Right. There's the thing for me is this. Okay, so let's say there's like pick whatever Lake whatever Succotoban, and Lake Succotoban has, you know, shallow weed edge, and it's starting to die off, and the bluegills are up there. You could catch as many bluegills as you want. Theoretically, you could park your boat in 5 feet of water and fish the entire lake, edge of Lake Succotoban, right? And burn blades and burn topwater. That's what everyone is doing. So if you're not the first guy there, the fifth guy there, it's Saturday next week. There's been 400 boats through that. Statistically speaking, the dummies have been smacked already. They've been smacked all summer long on blades and shallow presentations. What are you bringing to the table that's different? Nothing. I came up here and I went, okay, walk in the musky shop, talk to the guides. Oh, they're up shallow, but they're not eating. Well, they're up shallow. What do we present to shallow muskies with? Blades and topwater. That's what we do, right? Break out a crane or a shallow invader or a shallow raider. That's what you got. Well, they've been had the freaking teeth smacked out of them since June or whatever opener is, last week of May, and the shallow's up. Big fish have the tendency to relate to deeper water. They've been overlooked all year long, and now they're accessible in the shallow part of the water column. The shallow part of the water column does not have to have a direct corollary with the shallow littoral zone, right? Muskies are holding it 2 feet deep. That does not necessarily mean that the structure beneath them has to be 4 feet deep. They're high in the water column. Right? They're coming up for thermal energy. They're coming up because bait fish are eating shallow. So Donkey Kong might be out there at 2 feet deep over 20 feet. Don't overlook it. Don't fish the same fish that have had their teeth beaten out all freaking year long. You know, I proved the point this week. Jay's seen it. You've seen the pics. You've seen the videos. I'm not trying to toot my own horn, but beep, beep. From day one when I've been up here, it's like open water, suspended fish, outside edge. Most of what I've done has been with the boat in 11 to 20 with baits that are running surface to 4. Okay? If I'm hearing a bite where people are going, I'm seeing them, but I'm not catching them. And I hear it, and I hear it, and I hear it, and I hear it, and I hear it. You know, and old Lloyd comes in the show. Oh, I got two. Okay, fantastic. But nine other guys said they haven't caught one. don't follow the herd. Don't have the herd mentality. You have to be ultra shallow structurally. You get what I'm saying, Jay? It's not structurally shallow. It is water column shallow during this period.
Nobody's doing that.
Well,
it's not the way.
Booker the other night and I said, I smacked three trolling topwaters and he laughed. He said, are you kidding me? I said, we talked about it. I talked about the body of water we were on.
Yeah.
We've been on it together.
Yep.
Pretty steep. And I said, I got on the trolling motor and I set out the spread with what I could, which was the maximum.
Mm-hmm.
And three fish. Right? So they're high in the water column, but they're not deep in the cover. There are fish that are, there are fish that have their tail sitting on mud right now. I assume by the time I got there, somebody's caught them or somebody's seen them. It's the same as season opener, right? I always say, you know, if you're not there on opening day, the further we get into the opener, forget about it. Do something different. This was an open water thing. I did it on five different lakes and five different levels of water clarity. Highway 70, about the darkest lake you've ever seen. Pike Round Chain. That is the most tannic water I think I've ever seen. It looks like
there's a few other lakes out in that area too that are super tannic, right? Dark, yeah. With that,
it worked there. Other lakes won't name. Fish some stuff that was gin clear. Worked the same pattern, and people are going, "How you catch them?" Well, I'm telling you now because it doesn't matter because I'm going back to Tennessee where I'm going to smack the teeth out of them there too. But think differently. Think outside of the box structurally right now. Understanding that first contact point, understanding that first break, and being able to identify the outside edge of things, I think is paramount for somebody that catch a big one, right? I've not seen too many fish pulled lately that have been donkeys that have been easy up shallow, right? It happens, don't get me wrong. And I'm sure, you know, Cliff Knutson and Ronnie Herbert and Dickie Dick Moore caught 64 inches, whatever. But in general, any body of water that quote unquote has a hot bite, that shallow water bite has been beat to death. And it's, I think, a unique opportunity as we go later in the year. I'm not just not talking Northwoods, right? This is going to happen in West Virginia. This is going to happen in Ohio. As we go on, add another week, it moves down. Add another week, it moves down. Tick, 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 tick to the most southern range, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's going to happen. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. And then we need to transition into that fall bite, which we'll get to here shortly, that transitional bite. But, man, what a phenomenal time to target shallow fish. Booker and I talked about the other day. Big baits, shallow presentation, right? Speed. Well, how about big baits, shallow water presentation over deep water? Right?
Yep.
Two casts off the bank. If you're struggling right now, if you're a Northwoods angler and you're struggling and you can't make it happen, get two casts off. Report back to me. Hey, I saw one. I got one. Whatever. It's going to change your game. I saw the pattern. I exploited the pattern. And I, like I said, the amount of time I had in the water and the amount of production we had was pretty phenomenal. And across the different kind of water clarity, Vilas, Forest, Oneida counties, it worked. I think I could take the same thing and do it in Indiana. I know I could. Kentucky, I've done it. Tennessee, I've done it. West Virginia, I've done it for years. So think differently about shallow water fall presentations. Shallow does not necessarily mean shallow structurally in the fall.
Here's one for you, Steve. You
What's
ready?
That?
You sitting yeah. down? You want a chip or something? Pepsi?
I can't drink I got so many emails. I can't eat chips on the show anymore.
There was despicable. A lot of opposition to that.
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
Neighbor Steve. How about Neighbor Steve? Big shout out.
He made the steak.
The dinner last night that Steve and neighbor Robin made. Thank you.
You know what, Jay?
It was wonderful.
0 out of 10 in my book.
I'm 10 out of 10. I'm 0 out of 10. About it. Fantasizing about that meal was
0 out of 10. There is no dinner roll. I thought
we had baked potatoes. Cool.
There was the baked potato. Asparagus. The steak was phenomenal. Oh. There was asparagus.
Anyway, what was I saying? Okay,
no listen, dinner here, roll. Here are you kidding? No dinner. Are you kidding me?
180.
It's offensive.
Hey, Elmer wasn't invited. Okay. Next time we'll make it happen.
I love you, neighbor Steve. Yep. Anyway,
I forgot what I was going to say. No, I didn't. Because here it comes. Okay, I think a lot of people might have a hard time detecting when and why they should do that, because if bait fish is very high in the water column off structure, mm-hmm. it's really hard to detect, especially if there's any wind. You're not seeing them break the surface. You might not visually see them in dark water, and your locator's not running them. You know, follow?
Basically,
what keyed you in? I believe you said earlier that mm-hmm. you saw stuff breaking the surface. It's like, well, there's
I've seen
fish
stuff
breaking, here,
but we have wind smacking. I talked to the two brothers that work at Muskie Shop, right? The kids.
Yep, okay.
We live on the clear body water.
Yes.
He said, we went out the other day, and he said, we couldn't catch one. We saw them chasing crappies in the middle of the lake.
Mm, okay.
That's a gin clear lake.
Yeah.
So, again, we need to be observant. I mean, the difference between figuring this out and not figuring it out is slowing down the last 200 yards going into the edge versus raring into your spot a cast and a half off of it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And being well-versed with your electronics. I mean, it's not like hoodoo voodoo, like I've got some magical sixth sense that goes, okay, I need to ascertain our fish mid, shallow, or deep. Mm-hmm. How do I do it, folks? We've talked about it. Read the book, Next Level Muskie Fishing, where I say, have a three-point check. Well, I don't have a daily check on these Northwoods lakes, so I need to be observant. Basically this, simplified. Where's the deep water? Where's the mid-level water? Where's the shallow water on this lake I'm confronted with, right?
Uh-huh.
Let's find a deep, mid, shallow, shallow, mid, deep, however we want to do it, and check them before we just start hucking and chucking and committing. You know? It's like getting married. You better test the goods before you put a ring on it.
It's hard for some people to not start fishing immediately when they get out there. You're anxious.
You know what? Excitement. You know what? We've talked about landing fish. Stay calm. You know, you launch your boat, you're ready to go. You got a sucker in your cooler. Everybody's dreaming of a 50.
Yeah.
They're fired up. They're ready to go. And what they do in the first 20 minutes often screws up the rest of the day. Right? We're dealing with animals. We're dealing with nature. We're dealing with water. You have to be observant. The advent of modern muskie electronics has made it so much easier to ascertain whether fish are mid-shallow and deep. Take 10, 15, 20 minutes out of your day and figure it out. Now, how do we do that? We need to look at structural elements. Where is a good mid-spot, shallow, deep, to observe? Are we competent and comfortable with electronics, right?
Yeah.
That's a problem. A lot of people are not comfortable nor competent with them, so they don't trust them. That's a whole other animal, right? So it's baby steps, Jay. Baby steps to comfortable. Baby steps.
Hey, what time is it, Buck?
Buck, it's 7:15, and we've already got 7 salmon in the boat, folks.
I am going to ask you what time it is repeatedly.
Repeatedly.
That just dawned on me.
Me and Jay watched a show, Buck McNeely Outdoors. It was phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
He asked the guide repeatedly what time it was. His son had a do-rag on. He had an American flag shirt on from, it looked like Academy Sports. And they basically stuck all 5 fingers in the gills of every trout they caught. We call that gill with the F, right? basically you just stick your hands in and you just jam around till they bleed all over you. So that was the best outdoor show I've ever seen. Look it up. Buck McNeely. Nonetheless, that's what they play at 11:30 at night when you've been drinking in the Northwoods on TV. So, but what I want you to do is get comfortable with these elements. I mean, like, I want to say I'm going because I want to say it's not that hard, but it is. It is baby steps to make foundational additions to your muskie game. Right? Great example this week. Jace Kumpf, great friend, probably the lowest density muskie fishery on planet Earth.
Yeah. He's fishing his home
South Dakota.
South Dakota.
Oh, yeah. Come on.
And he's been attempting to get one of those two fish in there, you know, for right. some time and trying different techniques. And
we were texting. Yeah. It was structure, weather, water read, the whole bit. Boom. Got a great fish.
Yep.
And, you know, it's not, I didn't come up with all this stuff. Jay didn't come up with this stuff. You know, it's just the culmination thereof. Be diligent about this. I don't know any. Okay, so, and I was talking on the boat, and I'm sorry if I'm prattling along. Jay, can I eat your nuts?
Mixed or?
Cashew.
Cocktail peanuts?
No, Riders? I don't need peanuts.
Okay, hold on. Let me drop the mic. Waka 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 waka.
Give me.
These are quieter than those crunchy kettle chips you like so
folks,
much.
Folks, Jay always has kettle chips here.
Your favorite, Arrows by Extra.
What you got here?
There you go. Be careful.
Let me take a taste here.
Delicious.
Jay's nuts are delicious. Anyway, nonetheless, what we want to do is we want to make sure that we're being deliberate. I don't know anyone that is successful. You know, a lot of us watch football or whatever it is. You know, a quarterback is deliberate in what he is doing, right? It's deliberate. There's nothing arbitrary. It's not schoolyard football in the NFL when we go, somebody go deep and throw the Hail Mary every pass, right? To be successful is an act that is deliberate and is thought out. You have a game plan. You execute the game plan. And if the opposition puts forth something you were not expecting, guess what you do? You augment your game plan. Jay, thank you for your nuts.
Run play option. That's what Booker used to say. Do the old run play option.
Well, he coached high school football forever, and they had like four plays.
Did he coach high school football?
And them.
Oh.
Yeah.
Huh. Back in the day.
He got ran out of the league.
Cheating?
No, I don't think so.
He hooked up with the Saints. It's just like, drinking. Yeah, we're going to play dirty. That's going to be this year's program, and we're going to win by
They God. Were running film on Ryan Lander. Anyway, man, you know what? I was going to do Q&A. I'm sorry. I'm chewing Jay's nuts.
I hurt myself today.
You know what? I'm just going to ramble because, you know what? Frig it.
Hey, you know, by the way,
I'm
going to bring up one. I think I'm going to put it on tomorrow. Did you hear about what happened today in Minocqua?
What is that?
I think there was a fight at the boat ramp.
Me and Steve Herbeck had her out today at the boat ramp.
Video coming tomorrow.
Listen, Steve Herbeck, you son of a bitch. Paybacks are coming.
Hung out with Herbie this morning before you got there, and I had such a good time with that guy.
I love Herbie.
We were laughing, and yeah, I love him. He's a hoot, and I was hanging out with him doing some video stuff and just telling stories.
Well,
good time.
And we had a hoot. So What else would I say? I want to do Q&A, but I want to sort of hammer this. I hope I'm making sense. It's not a ninja thing, but screw it. You know, make an assessment. We've said it for years. Make an assessment on your body of water. Make an intelligent assessment based on forage, based on structure, based on seasonality. I mean, that's what it boils down to. I don't think what you're throwing matters as much as where you're throwing it and are active muskie going to be there. You know, it boils down to that. Other than that, Jay, what do you think? We're going to get past this. How soon is it going to transition up here where all this is out the window? It might be Saturday. It
might be this weekend.
But what are we looking for? What are sort of the things we could look for on electronics? We go, okay, the shallow thing is done. Is it a matter of all the baits mid, all the baits deep? And when do we really need to focus on live bait? Because a lot of places are sold out of live bait, or people out there are soaking live bait, they're soaking big suckers. They're not getting eaten because they're 8 feet below the muskies.
Good point. I think that's happening. Not that they wouldn't eat them, but
they're below. They're muskies below don't them. Eat things below. Yeah, they look forward and up.
Absolutely. You don't want to fish underneath them, obviously.
Right. So what do we need to be looking for? What are some transitional things?
Look at the water temps. I mean, they've actually gone up a little bit. You're talking mid-60s right now. It's crazy. So warmer than it should be. Forecast for this weekend is potentially highs in the 40s by this weekend. Drastic cold front. It's going to bring the water temp down. Lows in the 30s. I think by the end of the weekend, you're going to see water temps clearly sliding into the 50s. And that's when, you know, it's primo temperature for a sucker bite. As for your electronics and observance of the shallows is, if you have the opportunity to fish a lake, say, once a week, perhaps, you can monitor how the weeds are doing. They are going to start to break up and die. I've seen that on the river system when I went out there the other day. There's a ton of stuff dissipating and just completely cloudy algae everywhere where the weeds are turning black and dying. So, nut eater over there. What do you think, Steve? What do you think? How do you approach observing a lake to see when that actual pre-turnover time is launching into, it's almost ready to start turning over? The larger lakes around here are going to be looking at that in the next several weeks. It probably will be delayed. They're, you know, when we get hard cold fronts like that where the temperature absolutely crashes and people go, oh my gosh, what am I going to do this weekend? Like, for example, one of the biggest tournaments in the area, the St. Germain tournament, this weekend.
And I think it's 45
hundreds
to high.
Of people. Yeah. So, and it's funny. It's not funny, but it's a fairly late scheduled tournament. And it's.
It was on the news last night.
Yeah. They mentioned it. Oh, quite often, I guess what I'm getting at is that if it's going to snow, like you're going to get that first snow of the year, you're lucky you're getting out of here because it's going to turn nasty.
Forget this noise.
Is that first day of the tournament or maybe the second day of the tournament, people are like, oh, my lids are frozen shut and there's an inch of snow on the boat. So, and it's gone by the afternoon, but still, that's a harsh, it's almost too much, but at times, especially with deer hunting, first time it snows or first time you get some sleety precip, they go crazy.
I think
so,
about
often the results are usually great for that tournament weekend, the first week of October in northern Wisconsin.
I think about this often of like, how do guests ever catch fish without electronics, right? Like let's take the electronics out of the equation. My grandfather would often start the day by fishing for panfish.
Yeah.
Right? Why would he do that? You get a client out there and a friend or whomever. They want to catch a muskie. They don't want to catch a bluegill. Well, you know, if I take a piece of red worm and I put it on a float or whatever it might be, how are those nuts, Jay? Salty. Let's say okay. Whew. We got to figure it out. We got no electronics. How would fish for panfish? Made sense. Are they shallow, mid, or deep? Right. So he would work on catching.
That's the first thing he was looking for.
Right.
What depths are the panfish?
What are the bait fish, right?
Mm-hmm.
What's happening? Because you can always catch panfish, but if say we're on Middle Island Creek or whatever, freaking Stone Cold, I don't give a shit where you're at. If you can't catch a bluegill up shallow, and you're taking floats and you're moving out to 15 feet deep under the float, you at least have a baseline. We need to get a baseline of activity. It's the same thing I've been harping on, mid, shallow, deep, whatever. And so when we get a front like that, you go, huh, I'm having extreme difficulty catching bait fish for muskies.
They moved.
They moved.
That might be the main visual key thing that you will notice in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're right.
And when things move, they change your feeding habits.
Yeah.
Right? What is a pattern? This is. I'm glad we're doing this. It's interesting because we rarely just prattle between the two of us. A musky pattern is a moment in time where they're dialed in on something. Right? I've never seen a pattern. I'm talking like a pattern, like where you're like just beating the freaking balls off of them. I've not seen that last more than 4 or 5 days ever. That a pattern for muskies is food is staged in such a manner that is easily accessible. That's it. What is a musky pattern? Easy food. Right? It's not that muskies are staged. I mean, muskies being staged at 8 feet is an arbitrary statement, opposed to muskies are staged at 8 feet because crappie or walleye are staged at 6 feet and they're going to make the move up during majors and minors and sunrise and sunset to freaking smoke them. So if we do not have a grasp on a food source, an apex predator, tracking down the apex predator becomes an arbitrary endeavor. So my grandfather would really make sure that he understood what the forage was doing. Once you understand the forage placement, you can sort of conceptualize where muskies will be. This week, crappies, bluegills, panfish were on the top. And they were on the top in open water. And how did I figure that out? Side scan, live image.
Okay.
Right? Could I have figured that out with hook and line? Yes, it would have taken me far longer.
Probably.
But, I mean, I was watching pontoon boats on a couple bodies of water. Just dinguses, right? Here's Donnie and Deborah Dingus. Oh, we're going to catch a mess of them tonight, boys. We're going to fly them out. They're going to go back to their home and watch America's Got Talent and eat crappie sandwiches. But they're lighting them the frick up off their...
We bought the bass and buggy. We're out here. We're going to drink 14 Schlitz and catch panfish.
They're out there smoking these things in open water. They dingused into it. Right? Find the pattern. You have to make an assessment of what is currently going on any given day. It is your job as a musky angler to be observant. The first hour on the water is not about catching a fish. It's not. We want to. And I thought about this week, and I screwed this up a couple days. I'm driving in the truck. This is what I am going to do and how I'm going to do it, because either yesterday it worked or it's supposed to work today in my head, right? Everybody's got a plan. Everybody's got something to say. You know, what's the Mike Tyson thing? Everybody's got a freaking plan to get punched in the face.
Okay.
Right? Well, I had a couple days this week where hubris and ego got a hold of me. I'm like, oh, this one went. Most of the time, though, however, I'm going out and going, let the lake tell you what to do. Right? And when you get dialed in, you're like, I'm killing it. But, man, small changes cost me 5-6 hours where it might have been a 2 fish day versus 1 fish day.
That's what you said.
Yeah. I told Jay that on the phone. I said, man, I screwed the first part of the trip up because I was so confident, but I wasn't competent. Right? Confidence means nothing if you're not competent. If I'm not competent in what is happening with forage, what is happening with muskies, then everything I'm doing is just completely useless. So we need to be observant. We need to be open to what the lake is telling us far more than what we think should be happening, which the problem in the Northwoods, which is transcended in muskie fishing, is everybody's seeing them up shallow, but nobody's catching them. The whole podcast could be four seconds long based on that statement. Well, we're seeing them, but we're not catching them. Haven't caught one in 5 days. I've talked to guides that haven't caught a muskie in 7-8 days. I'm not.
Well, next week it's going to be cooler. It'll be better.
It'll be better.
Oh, man. Yeah. Don't talk that way. Don't think that way.
Don't give me that shit. Not interested. I need one now. I need him an hour ago. So, what are we going to do to be competent? Right? Again, this week, I had a great week. But there's a couple, like I said, half days, a little cocky. But look at the lake. What? Me? No, never. So
you were very happy.
I was very happy. But looking at what the lake is telling us and constantly paying attention, and I would say more so than anything, this transitional period for the fall is competence in your electronics and competence in your analytical skills, right? To take what you're seeing and translate it into what the bite is. It's hardly anything. The later we get, guess where they're all at, Jay? They're on deep breaks. We know that.
That's coming.
That's right. Coming. It's going to be have your boat in 15 to 20 or 12 and soak a sucker, depending on how deep the water is. Put it 3/4 of the way down, you'll get to eat. But right now, we need to sort of ascertain shallow, mid, deep. So pay attention to your electronics. Be competent in that. I mean, you got to be confident, too. I like confident comedy.
I'm just thinking of what Joe Booker used to always say about
Duke Duker.
Book Daddy.
Book Snooker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Big Joe.
You been drinking?
Nope.
Yeah. What? Well.
And
can you walk this line?
Talk about like pre-electronics fishing,
mm-hmm.
about being observant. Hey, do you see a deer on the shore? Stuff like that. All of a sudden, there's 5 deer.
Are we
drinking?
Are we on a boat?
There's probably some kind of window going on, mm-hmm. right now. You know, and it's noticing bait fish in open water versus seeing nothing. All those little things that he used to do that, you know, when the only thing he had was probably like a paper graph.
A flasher or a paper graph.
A flasher, maybe.
You know, you got to use what you're given. I mean, like I said, my grandfather fishing for bluegills just to get a read wasn't a bad idea.
Not a bad idea at all.
It's, you know, or, you know, Booker was a multi-species guy for a long time. Yeah. Go out and smoke some walleye. Well, the walleyes are on X, Y, and Z.
Smallmouth bass. Smallmouth,
right. So don't downgrade yourself enough to go fish multi-species. That's just shameful, but at least find them on your graph. I don't know. It's just a matter of observance. I think the difference for me this week has been being observant and being a student of the body of the water I'm on, and being willing to adapt. Like I said, you know, you get your pants pulled down, get spanked a couple of times at Jay's house, you realize don't pop popcorn in the middle of the night. What I was trying to say is if you get your pants pulled down and get spanked on the lake for half the day, you got to make a change, is what I was trying to say, Jay.
There you go. Did you make popcorn the other night?
Well,
I didn't hear it.
Yeah, it got creepy.
I leave Steve in the basement. I normally don't, you know, see or hear him very much.
No, it's we call that the bad room. oh my God. like I said, it's just my ramblings. It's fall ramblings. It's fall thoughts. The transition is coming. It is an inevitability. We're all going to go through this transition from north to south. Canada's already sort of on that winter bite. We're going to be here in a minute as far as that pre-ice bite, that turnover stop. Think differently. Get off the edge. The more pressure, the one thing I'll say is this before I wrap it up, the more pressure the water you're fishing has,
the more you need to think outside the box.
Yeah. Absolutely. If you're on freaking Donkey Lake and you're there's four houses on Donkey Lake and I'm the only one that fishes muskies, don't do anything I said.
Right. Right. You're sitting on a gold mine. That's
right.
Awesome.
You're sitting on a gold mine. Oh, we're over here on East.
There's no boat landing and there's only four houses.
Right.
Chester over there, he just fishes crappie right. Occasionally.
East Dick of Tobin.
He's like, hey, Jack, how's it going over there today? Getting any crappie?
All right. Yeah. If you got a honey hole, but if you're on public water, you know, this is buck season, son.
Well, you pulled into a lake, a well-known lake just west of town the other day, and we've been there a handful of times mm-hmm. or more, and you described how many boats, how many rigs were on there.
Oh, my God.
Kind of shocking.
Oh, dude. It was a Saturday.
Yeah,
I pulled into a pretty decent lake. I mean, it's numbers, but it's got some trophy class potential, like mid-40s. Yeah. And the boat ramp is really designed to maybe hold five or six trucks.
Yeah, if you use your head when you park.
And right. This thing was 200 yards of trailers. There had to have been 30 boats there, right? Everybody knows this is the time, this is the place to latch into big fish. I mean, as we go further into October, that stretch is going to get further south. You're going to see the ding-dongs coming out of the woodwork, right? So don't compete. Do something different. Like you said, though, we're joking. If you're on low pressure water or high density, whatever, beat the shallows and be done with it. Most of us are simply not. You know, you think the fish that are shallow, Monona, haven't seen a bucktail this year, Jay?
You know? Case in point. Absolutely.
I mean, seriously.
Yeah.
So you're telling me there's a muskie on Monona that's not seen double eggs.
I think you're resorting to absolutely only finding that narrow window that's going to occur. And no one knows when that's going to happen. And you could wait all day out there.
Right.
In that case.
Of something.
There's that much pressure.
If you don't know Monona, that is a what?
An urban lake in Madison that is... It's a phenomenal fishery now. It's turned around. There's massive fish in there. It's good fishing, but mm-hmm. it's high pressure.
Right. With intelligent anglers.
Absolutely. And
it's not ding-dongs. I mean, this is Madison. This is Wisconsin, right?
Down there. Yeah, the travel to go there, you know, right. For sure.
So think outside of the box. Think structurally. Think smart. Anyway, I will be home here shortly.
Oh.
I thought we're going to catch up on Q&A. I'm so sorry I got to go down the rabbit hole here. It was just sort of the synopsis or the sort of the thesis of what I saw this week and experimenting and doing things differently.
Yep.
And just take, you know, a little tidbit. Take it to your home water. You know, you got a Saturday afternoon or whatever you have. Have a game plan, but have game plan B, C, D, and make sure you're competently figuring out what bait fish are doing because the muskies are going to follow suit. It's that time of year. What do you say, Jeff?
I think fall is the most it's absolutely the most complicated time of the year.
Absolutely.
The variables are bizarre. Some make sense, some don't. Okay, why is this sunny, cloudless, high pressure, cold mm-hmm. front kind of day? Why is this so good on...
Right.
Mid-October. Right, right, right. When in mid-September, it would have been very difficult.
Yeah, why is Joe Booker saying, get out there on the low-hanging cloud day, but yeah. I want a cold front in September.
And
nobody can really articulate
several weeks from
why.
Now we're going to be like, God, I wish we had just a one day where it would be completely sunny and it would be 4 degrees warmer than the water temperature is currently. I'm talking down the road here when it's, right. you know. In, let's say, late October or something. So
it's weird because
enjoy fall while before it
but
goes.
But you can catch a donkey bit. Like
moving progress.
Here in a few months, we'll be talking about fish the north end of the lake. The ice is out. It's slightly warmer. We're going, oh, I want it kind of cold or weird.
Yeah.
It's bizarre. And like you said, I think a lot of people just glance over this time frame. And the reason I said it's going to move north to south, right? The further you're on the habitat range, the later this will happen. But it's a bizarre period. It, like Jay just put it the best way I ever heard it, where you go, it sort of breaks all the rules of, you know, why do I want a cold front, but, you know, every other time I want a warm up, or I want this, or I want... You have to just take what you get and be smart about it. The fall is the time of like micro adjustments and smart gameplay, but that's when you can catch some of the biggest fish, because like we were saying, you might not want to have a sucker down 8 feet because these things are right on the surface. Be observant. I think, like you said, it's the most difficult time. What else would you think as far as like game plan or thought process you need to have coming into this time frame?
Well, I was just thinking again. I mean, if you could somehow take the time, I'm trying to wrap and put everything together from what you've been talking about with, you know, like what your grandpa used to do and what you do without electronics and what you are doing now with state-of-the-art electronics is form a quick an assessment as possible when you get on the lake. Is take the time to figure it out, because every day is going to be different now.
Mm-hmm.
It's always changing, and... there's no rhyme and reason to it sometimes.
Right.
It's just such a fast-moving cycle. So if you can go out and kind of get dialed in, Steve, but have a generalized idea of level, at least to start with, maybe, is what I'm thinking. And it's just like if you can go from there, you're probably going to stumble onto a really powerful window at some point. You know, as we get later in the year, sometimes those windows are 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, you can get two or three. If you were experimenting at that point and fishing in 3 feet because there's some fish up in the weeds yet, and you missed out because they aren't, and you should have been, you know, over 15 foot of suspended,
and
you missed it. You know,
the commentary there is you bring up a great point, which we've grown down the rabbit hole, which would be like, okay, let's say that we have a down scan sonar in the front and down scan in the back, right? And we're comfortable with them. And we've sort of gone, okay, we think bait fish in general for whatever lake we're on are 6 feet.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you've done one component of it. Now, if you don't understand the running depth of your bait correlated to speed, and you just said you're experimenting, what I thought of going, the guy that doesn't get the running depth of a shallow dog or a Medusa or a Spanky versus a cowgirl versus a freaking depth rater versus slammer, if you're not able to target specific depths right now, you're going to struggle. So you've got to understand forage, holding depth, seasonality, and what baits are going to present there.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So we need to have a mastery of electronics, and we need to have a mastery of running depth in relation to speed, which is a whole other freaking topic of going, you know, you can't rip a shallow dog faster than crap, and it's not going to be more than 2 feet under the surface, Bogo. Okay, I need a mid-alpha dog to hit 6 feet with some ripping action that's going to be fast enough to trigger a strike.
Well, and how many people have told you, give me three lures? You know, the super confident musky angler, give me three lures, that's all I need. No, sorry. And I know I work at the musky shop, you know.
That's true, because like
you need that full toolbox. You absolutely do.
Well,
there has to be different colors, you know, for the, the light preparation and the sky type of that day. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it be light, dark, or fluorescent or natural. And that's 15 podcasts. That's like a triple masterclass in terms of bait selection, because that is one of the most important things I think we could ever, dwell on is the bait selection and running depth and speed. And
yeah,
come on. I mean, you can't even start to talk about that and have it make sense to anybody.
Yeah.
You know, you have to,
you have to do it.
Have to know your tools, you know. It's just right. Like, okay, I understand this? Nobody, you know, not many people have, you know, 14 Lakewood monsters filled with,
and you don't have to
everything. You don't have to. We're not absolutely not saying that, but you have to have a proper variety to get the job done when the situation.
It's, you know, not. Arises. I'm not trying to be sexist because my wife is insanely competent with tools or whatever, right? But the old adage, like, you know, send your wife out to the garage and say, "Grab the Forstner bit."
Okay. Right?
Well, she's standing there going, "What is that?" You know.
Okay.
Or grab the. Grab the you know what, I need the Dremel tool, or I need, you know, I need the compound miter saw versus the chop saw, because those tools specifically do something very well, right? I mean, so a table saw, a circular saw, a miter saw, a compound, whatever, there's a lot of saws, but they specifically do something better than the other. If you don't understand the differences between them, how would you understand their appropriate application? And that's what me and Jerry are always saying all the time. I mean, if you distill it down, whatever you might be in, where, you know, you might not be a woodworker, you might be a tech programmer, you go C++ versus Python versus frickin' Linux versus whatever versus frickin' coding languages, you go, every coding language has its benefits. What is the most applicable for what my end goal is? And that is lure selection, right? So whatever you're looking for, hell, another analogy, I'm a roofer, whatever, asphalt versus aluminum versus whatever. There are whatever purview you do as a profession, whatever you have as a profession right now, you will see differences in choices that end that dictate end results, right? That is lure selection. Simply put, think of it that way. We talk about all the time simplifying this thing. Once you have the mastery of that, then we start getting into all the other things. And it's not a matter of, like Jason, you don't have to have all these lures, but you go, you know, what tool do I use for this job? You don't take your circular saw to tighten the valve stem on your toilet. Right?
You don't throw a Magnum Bulldog.
In the toilet.
Underneath the fish.
Right.
I want to be working a bait 2 feet down.
Preach. Yeah. And that's
that
not a Mag Dog.
That running too deep. It's right. Running way too deep.
Yeah, it might be a shallow
fast,
Mag Dog,
keep
right?
Keep my rod up. It's still running too deep. Okay, different. That dictates a different application okay. For a different lure.
We're down.
I want a jointed shallowator.
We're down the rabbit hole. I'll leave it at this.
Yeah, I mean, go.
Okay, because I could go on for about 4 hours right now about say this.
But it's 12:36.
Yeah, and I'm very tired. I'm very drunk.
JJ has to work in the morning.
Me pee pee. Water temp. Juxtaposed with weather dictates speed, right? Seasonality dictates size, right?
Yeah. Okay.
The staging of bait fish dictates depth.
Ooh, hello. Bingo. There you go. Case closed. Night, everybody.
Later.
Time. every step.